From Bureaus Worldwide, this is FSN.
Thanks very much, Simon. That's an incredible deal, isn't it? $300 million, apparently. Bob Dylan has sold his back catalogue to Universal Music. 77. Yeah, I'm not too keen on that, to be honest. I don't like that. Pretty soon, some of Bob's songs will start appearing in dreadful commercials for all manner of things, from loo roll to cars to God knows what else. Anyway, how are you, by the way? Are you well? Welcome to Monday's radio show.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, the one and only Dr., the Dr., Vernon Coleman, will be on the program with me in the second hour. It's not an every Monday thing. It's as many Mondays as he wants to come on. And he's on today, and I'm glad he is. A lot to talk about with the great Dr. Vernon Coleman. Do check out vernoncoleman.com, his website, which is a treasure trove of important information. He'll be on with me just after the top of the next hour. And mad that, isn't it, Bob Dylan? What do you think of that? We have these, we mythologize the singers and songwriters we have loved over the years. Quite a few superstars have never sold out in terms of they've never licensed their music for commercial gain. You know, two of the most famous would be Bruce Springsteen and U2. I know some of you will say now, Richie, you're wrong about U2. Wasn't their image on one of, if not the very first iPods? It was, but they didn't take any money for it. They didn't take any money at all. They released the track Vertigo, and the iPod was a new thing, and Steve Jobs was pretty pally with Bono. This is after Bono went to the dark side now, when Bono became very good friends with Bill Gates and Bill Clinton and others. And Steve Jobs said, listen, can we use Vertigo? And we'll make a special iPod with your image on it. And U2 said, yeah, but we don't want any money for it. And they never took any money. They were offered millions by Coca-Cola back in 1991. Coca-Cola wanted to use the song even better than the real thing, because Coca-Cola, of course, one of its catchlines is the real thing, isn't that right? And it was an enormous amount of money. And at that stage, U2 weren't anywhere near as wealthy as they are now, but they turned it down. So I don't like Bob Dylan selling his back catalogue for $300 million to Universal Music, but we don't know the full details. It might be that Universal Music gets it for a time period, 5 years or 10 years, I don't know. But presumably, Universal Music are not stupid. They will obviously use that music to advertise Shake and Vac and God knows what else. And Dave, this grease is going nowhere. All that sort of stuff, you know. Queen sold out. The theme to Flash being used for Flash and all sorts of stuff. Anyway, what are you talking about, Paulie? Nothing. Had a lovely weekend, lovely afternoon yesterday. Some friends came around. Great company. Lovely and chilled. That was nice. How are you doing? You might be wondering, why isn't that useless bald gammon covering the 11th hour Brexit negotiations? Because we're tired of Brexit, aren't we? I mean, you'll know that the European Union's chief negotiator is Michel Barnier. You'll know that. You'll know that he's in the UK at the moment. They're trying to accommodate a trade agreement, blah, blah, blah. The European Union wants access for its fishermen to come and fish our waters. And they want a level playing field, which basically just means the UK agreeing to a set of shared rules and standards to ensure that businesses in country A don't have an unfair advantage over their competitors in countries B, C, D, E and F. You get that? Brussels wants the UK to adhere to EU rules on workers' rights, environmental regulations and state aid. The UK says, no, we voted because we wanted to take back our sovereignty. And the reason I'm not covering it today is because you and I both know that the UK is not leaving the European Union in any meaningful way. We know this. We discussed all of this earlier this year, what the withdrawal agreement really means, etc., etc. Bore off, you big baldy bastard. Exactly. It doesn't matter now, because the World Health Organization, Gavi and Sage and Imperial College London are running the country now, aren't they? We'll take back sovereignty. We'll take back our rights. And we'll let Bill Gates and his mates basically take decisions that govern the entire country from now on in. Did you see the vaccination cards this morning, did you? Now, this has caused a right ruckus around the country. And I was accused, I was accused this morning of jumping the gun. But I don't think I have jumped the gun. If I had, it wouldn't be the first time. I am an overreactor in a great line, or from a great line of overreactors. But I think I've gotten this one fairly spot on. So people will begin to receive the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine from tomorrow here in the UK. And I'll just say this one last time. You might be listening. You might have stumbled across this radio show today. I'm not telling you what to do, but I wouldn't touch that vaccine with a barge pole. And in this news roundup, you're going to hear why. We'll get to that now in a few minutes. So the papers had photographs this morning of a card, like a little business card, that will be given to everyone who gets the vaccine. Now, to be fair, and I acknowledge this, to be honest about it, it does look like an appointment card, because you do need two doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine. You get one, and then about 21 days later, or thereabouts, you get your booster. So on the front of this card, which has been printed up and the media got a hold of it today, on the front of it, it says, don't forget your COVID-19 vaccination. Make sure you keep this record card in your purse or wallet. Again, I accept these cards have existed in the past, and I know why people said today, you jumped the gun, Baldy. This is just a reminder card with the information on the back and all of that. I hear you. But you're wrong, he says arrogantly. On the back, there's a place where your name will be printed at the top. And underneath, there are two columns marked 1 and 2, where the name of the vaccine itself, the name of it, strangely, the batch number and the date each dose was administered. That's to be printed in two columns on the back. Do you see the problem? While some folks have been saying, nothing to see here, it's a reminder card, it's an appointment card, it'll fit in your wallet, it'll have your name and the dates you were vaccinated on it, and you are being encouraged to keep it in your wallet, keep it about your person. So it makes it easy for some businesses, desperate for punters as they are, desperate for a few bob to come in, it makes it easy for them to decide by the way, to ask to see the card in the near future. Some of you have been saying, ah, Richie, anybody could forge this. Yes, of course. But do you think the government gives a damn that anybody can forge it? Obviously not, because this will quickly become a digital passport on your phone anyway. All the government is trying to do here, in my opinion, now this is my opinion, not fact, what it's trying to do is to condition people to get used to the concept of carrying this information around with you, where it might be useful, say, to get into a film or the things we've talked about in the past. So businesses might say, you know, I want to see, did you have the vaccine? And if you have, you can see Wonder Woman 1984. It's all the rage, the forthcoming Wonder Woman sequel. Gal Gadot. Yeah, she's easy on the eye. Now, this was something that Kay Burley put to Foreign Office Minister James Cleverly on her show this morning. Will this be, basically, is this just a passport? Kay Burley and James Cleverly, who's a Foreign Office Minister.
The little card that I've seen in the papers today for when you've had your vaccine, that's basically a passport, isn't it? That's a vaccine passport.
Well, ultimately, what we're looking to do is get this vaccine rolled out as quickly as possible. The Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation have put forward their advice in terms of the prioritisation of the vaccine to protect the most vulnerable, our key workers, and then the various age bands, sure. so we can get this rolled out quickly and start working back towards the lives that we were used to living, and so actually having confidence is important, and that's what the rollout plan is all about.
I have no problem with a vaccine passport, but Michael Gove sat there last week and said we were definitely not having one, and yet we see these cards in the papers today.
Jesus, Kay, you shouldn't say that.
I have no problem with a vaccine passport, but Michael Gove sat there last week and said we were definitely not having one, and yet we see these cards in the papers today.
I have no problem with the passport, Siske. What she's actually supposed to say is, Mr. Cleverly, many people around the country will be very concerned at what they will see as dystopian or Orwellian. They don't like that. Ira papirin bitte. But Kay says, I've no problem with the vaccine passports. She's more annoyed with Michael Gove, squirrely Michael Gove, for lying to her last week. Not at the actual enormity of having to carry a vaccine passport around with you. Anyway, what was Cleverly's answer to that?
Well, as I say, the priority is about making sure the rollout is first to the most vulnerable, also to our to the people that look after them and our key workers in the medical profession.
What is it if it's not a passport?
Ultimately, it's about making sure that there is a wide rollout and confidence in that rollout as well.
No, I understand.
So,
but it's a passport, isn't it? It allows you to go into places that you wouldn't be able to go if you didn't have it.
It's about unlocking people's lives. It's about unlocking the economy. It's about making sure we protect lives and protect livelihoods.
Well, he's admitting it here now. You see, they're denying it. Some government ministers are denying it. They're saying that people will not be required to have a vaccine passport, but they're lying through their teeth, which is what they do best. Cleverly is admitting it. It's about unlocking the economy, opening up again. This is a great way to do it. All you got to do is show that you had the vaccine and off you pop, kind of a thing, you know?
Well, there you go, we get it.
But it's a passport. And your colleague was saying it's not. So, you know, politicians, when they come on my programme, I expect them to be as honest as you and tell my viewers exactly what's happening. Sat there less than a week ago saying we weren't having them, and we quite clearly are.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Well, as I say, I think everyone would agree, I regard the most important thing is ensuring that we can use the vaccination programme to protect the most vulnerable, protect our key workers, and get back to life. Arguing over the semantics of the delivery of that is great. You know, I get that. But for us, the priority is making sure that this programme allows us to get back to normality as quickly as possible.
So what it is, and you may have seen a photograph of it now. If you haven't and you follow me on Twitter, scroll back 3 or 4 posts or whatever, you'll see my link to the Daily Mirror story. You will see the photographs. It's a vaccine ID card masquerading as an appointment card. Don't get that excited about it. It's meant to be digital in the long term anyway, on your phone or maybe tattooed onto your skin digitally, invisibly. Maybe. Right? We're alive to that, me and you. We've seen those stories. So while some of you are saying, great, they can be forged. Just to repeat that point, it doesn't matter. The government doesn't give a damn. It's trying to normalise the concept of carrying a vaccine card. This information, as we've already said, will be stored on your phone. And Charlotte from Burnley, how you doing, Charlotte? Says, Richie, the insufferable Mike Parry interviewed a guy who had invented the COVID passport app yesterday. Parry was all for it, of course, and said it was essential that everybody had it. That's Charlotte there in Burnley. Yes, you're getting very little pushback from your presenters on the BBC and on the commercial stations. They're just not inclined to want to ask any questions at all. And I know this is really boring stuff, because I must have said this to you 500,000 times. And if you've been with me since day one, I do bore myself sometimes. They're not pushing back. Kay said, I'm all for the passports. I have no problem with it, she said. Rather than say, come on, man, you know, this really is sinister, you know. We shouldn't be doing this. But anyway. Did you see the, speaking of the Daily Mirror, did you see the Mirror over the weekend? You might remember last week there were calls for celebrities to push the vaccine. And there was a hilarious front page of the weekend's Mirror, maybe Saturday's Mirror, maybe, could be Sunday's Mirror. I saw it on Gareth Ike's Twitter feed. It was basically a bunch of celebrities all coming out very strongly in favour of the vaccine. Michael Parkinson was there. Lulu was there. Well, Lulu was there. I know I'm amazingly gifted. Eamon Holmes was there. John Humphreys, Roger Daltrey, and then Bob Geldof. And nobody could explain to me what Bob Geldof was doing there. I mean, if the poll said 30% of the population might refuse the vaccine, if you get that scruffy, annoying bastard Bob Geldof involved, you're more likely to increase people. You're more likely to increase the numbers of those sceptical about taking the vaccine. Would you trust anything that Bob Geldof recommended? Anyway, speaking of John Humphreys, the former BBC News presenter, one of the campaigners promoting the vaccine, he was on Good Morning Britain today and he said this.
I didn't actually use the word controversy because it was a con man, basically, Andrew Wakefield, who called himself a doctor, who was a doctor, and he got a massive scare running on the basis of phony research. He was struck off the medical register and ran off to the United States, where he is to this day. And he was responsible for scaring a lot of people into not getting the MMR jab. And as a result of that, an awful lot of kids suffered hugely. And he should be ashamed of himself. Of course he should be. But there you go. He's making loads of money in the United States. So that's fine for him, I suppose. The fact is, MMR is safe, has saved a huge amount of suffering. Vaccines are good things. I've lived for a very long time. And when I was a kid in school, you know, it was normal for children to wear calipers because of polio. Children died. They were put into iron lungs and died because of polio. Then I took a we were given sugar lumps in school when I don't know what I was about. 13, 14, I suppose, the first polio vaccines. It killed polio. Vaccines are good things. And anybody who does not believe vaccines are good things are bonkers.
Bonkers. Frankly. Yeah. Today was an amazing day. I've not saved the clip because we don't have too much time. But BBC Radio 5 Live this morning spoke to the son now. The son of the man who wrote A Spoonful of Sugar Helps the Medicine Go Down. I kid you not. And they played it every half an hour. You remember the song Mary Poppins, A Spoonful of Sugar Helps the Medicine Go Down? You remember that? Mary Poppins. And they were using that this morning as a way of encouraging people to take the vaccine. Take the vaccine. It's good. Take it. And they were talking amongst themselves, the presenters. How would you take the vaccine? Are you going to have the vaccine? Everybody's going to have the vaccine, it seems. Honestly, they interviewed the son of the guy who wrote that song for the what is it, Disney? Yeah, the Disney movie. Yeah. Mad. Vaccine passports or having to have a vaccine, needing to have a vaccine to get from A to B and to basically live, to exist. Here's Nigel Farage, the leader of the Reform UK party, as the Brexit party is known as these days. Farage was on the Julia Hartley Brewer show on Talk Radio today. He told Julia that we will be forced into having a vaccine, like it or lump it.
Look, I want this thing to be over as quickly as possible. I agree with you. I think the government has taken outrageous levels of power over our lives. I mean, gosh, they're going to give us 4 days over Christmas when we can meet up with two other households. Isn't that nice of them? I mean, as if they own Christmas. They've even banned booze in pubs in Wales. I mean, the whole thing's awful. On the vaccine, look, I welcome anything that helps us get back to life as quickly as possible. But let's be honest about it. It links in with government power. I'm going to have no choice about whether I take the vaccine. Literally no choice at all. Because if I want to fly anywhere else in the world, they're going to insist that I have had it. And I think you'll find, Julia, that it may be very difficult for you to go into that building and work unless you've had the vaccine. That is how it's going to be done. And do I think it should be compulsory? Absolutely not. Do I welcome it as a way of perhaps getting back to some normality? Yes, I do. But I'm sorry, people out there that think they can avoid taking this vaccine, well, if you're retired and living in, you know, rural England somewhere, you probably can get away without having it. The rest of us will be forced into it.
Forced into it, coerced into it, forced into it. My pal Jeanne Crowley is not well there in Cleggan. Send out some healing vibes. Send out some healing energy. There was a time when people used to say things like that to me, that I used to say, you're bonkers. You're mad. You're away with the fairies. You, what would I say? What would I say? You New Age Looney Tunes. Well, I wouldn't. I'd say it behind their backs. It's the best way to do it, really. Send out a few positive thoughts there for Jeanne. She's wrapped up in bed with a dog and a cat for company. Not the worst place in the world to be, but it's not nice to be unwell. It's 23 and a half minutes past the hour. We're going to hear an extraordinary bit of audio in a moment, dear listener. All we really are now, I'm telling you. And coming up in hour two, the one and only Dr. Vernon Coleman. We love the man, don't we? He's on the programme. Lots to talk about with Dr. Vernon Coleman. In the second hour, he'll be phoning me from an undisclosed location in the UK. This is the Pasadena's, by the way, from 1990-something or other. Love this tune. The Richie Allen Show. Welcome. Good to be with you. The Pasadena's on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Monday the 7th of December 2020. The BBG, the biggest and the baldiest gammon there's ever been. I meant to say this to the future Mrs. Allen this morning. I can't believe I didn't tell her. Only an Irishman would play a practical joke on somebody he's never met in his life. I was on the way to the park this morning at about 6:40. That's my local park with both of my dogs in tow. It's a Monday morning. It's drizzling because it always is in Salford. Doesn't matter what time of year it is. And it's fairly miserable. And I hear somebody say, pick up after your dog. And I look around and I can't see anybody. And I obviously do pick up after my dog. And at 6:40 in the morning, you're not in the best of form really, are you? And I walk away and I hear it again, pick up after your dog. And it sounds Irish. Like, what's going on? So I turned around and I said, listen, whoever you are, will you come out? And this chap came from out from behind. He came out from behind a car. And he said, how are you, Richie? My name is Billy. I'm originally from Enniscorthy. I've lived here for years and I listen to the radio show and I only live around the corner. So he said, I thought I'd say hello to you. Only an Irish guy. There isn't another race, an ethnic group of people on planet Earth who would introduce themselves to somebody that they don't know by hiding behind a car in the dark at 6:40, saying, pick up after your dog, and then hiding. Billy, how you doing? It was nice to meet you. To meet you, nice. The Irish are cracked. Nutcases, 28 minutes past five it is this Monday. Yeah, you meet some oddballs around here, I tell you. Pick up after your dog. What the fuck is that? Where's that coming from? The two dogs are on edge. The heckles are up, you know. Ah, the Irish. Ah, the Irish. I was in a disco one time. I was DJing in a disco, as DJs do. And I was moonlighting. And I'm in the DJ box, and there's a massive dance floor right in front of me. And to the side of it is a seated area and a standing area where you can have drinks. I swear to God and Sonny Jesus, I witnessed an Irishman with his hands in his pocket kick a woman in the arse as she walked past him. And when she turned around, surprised obviously and a bit annoyed, he said, do you want to dance? Do you want to dance? She said something unrepeatable to him and she walked away. And I looked at myself. There was a mirror in the DJ box. Did I just witness that? Only in Ireland. Now, half five it is. Listen to this. Listen to this. Professor of Pharma... Oh, Richie. I should have practiced this. I'm not sure I'll be able to pronounce this. Professor of Pharmacoepidemiology. Pharmacoepidemiology. That's the one. Stephen Evans. And he's Professor of Pharmacoepidemiology at the London School of Tropical Medicine. Tropical diseases will give you coughs and wheezes, that sort of stuff, right? Professor, I'm going to say it again, Pharmacoepidemiology, Stephen Evans, and he spoke today to Sky News presenter Colin Brazier. You will hear the presenter, then you will hear Professor Stephen Evans. And this is really important, this. Have a listen. Feast your ears.
We've seen some survey data recently published suggesting that anything up to 20% of the UK population remains sceptical about the necessity of a jab. How do we go about persuading those people who are sceptical about whether they actually need the jab or not?
Well, my personal view is that we shouldn't make this compulsory. That will reduce confidence, if anything, in my view. But that's a very personal view. I think you have to try and get people to listen to the evidence. And the clear evidence we have here is that there are no serious adverse effects to this vaccine when we have studied it in more than 10,000 people who've been vaccinated. One of the things that's happened in the trials is that there was at least one death in the trial. Fortunately, in some senses, but very sad for the individual, of course, and their family. But fortunately, it happened to be in the placebo group, the person who didn't get the vaccine. And so we're going to see over the coming days and weeks, we will have reports of deaths following the vaccination. There'll be strokes, there'll be heart attacks, because we're vaccinating a very vulnerable population. That's why we're doing it, because they are at risk of dying from COVID-19. But sadly, they're also at risk of dying from other things. So one of the key things will be getting people's understanding that lots of these adverse effects are merely coincident.
Listen to that again, the last 25 seconds, and listen to it like your life depended on it.
And so we're going to see over the coming days and weeks, we will have reports of deaths following the vaccination. There'll be strokes, there'll be heart attacks, because we're vaccinating a very vulnerable population. That's why we're doing it, because they are at risk of dying from COVID-19. But sadly, they're also at risk of dying from other things. So one of the key things will be getting people's understanding that lots of these adverse effects are merely coincident.
I think Tom has a question for Stephen.
Let me ask you something. Are you out of your fucking mind?
Listen again. Let's take it step by step.
And so we're going to see over the coming days and weeks, we will have reports of deaths following the vaccination.
We will have reports of deaths following the vaccination.
There'll be strokes, there'll be heart attacks, because we're vaccinating a very vulnerable population.
There will be strokes, there will be heart attacks, because we're vaccinating a very vulnerable population. This is truly bombshell stuff. And the presenter wasn't listening to a word of it. Colin Brazier. It was a run-of-the-mill interview for him. He's looking at his notes, he's got a producer speaking to him from the gallery in his ear. He's not even listening to this. We're going to have deaths and strokes and heart attacks because of adverse effects, because of the vaccination.
That's why we're doing it, because they are at risk of dying from COVID-19. But sadly, they're also at risk of dying from other things. So one of the key things will be getting people's understanding that lots of these adverse effects are merely coincidental.
Very key that we get people to accept and understand that the adverse effects they are going to see in the coming weeks are coincident. Is there such a word now? I'm an English graduate. Coincidental or coincidence? Coincident? Sure, I've never used that word before. That's mind-blowing. He goes on and it gets interesting. It gets even more interesting, I should say. Does this Stephen Evans, Professor of Pharmacoepidemiology, London School of Tropical Medicine.
We saw this with MMR and autism.
Oh yeah, listen up. Let's start that again. Yeah. We saw this with MMR and autism.
We saw this with MMR and autism, that when you vaccinate people at around the age that they get autism diagnosed, then you get a coincidence of vaccination followed by autism. And we'll see that again. But the right way to do it is to ask people where their evidence is that it's harmful. Trace back the source of that evidence and see whether it's reliable. and trace back the source of evidence that says that it is safe, that we have searched for harms and not found them. We can't guarantee perfect safety in the sense that there are zero harms. People will get sore arms, and sometimes those sore arms will last a while and they'll end up in some pain for a little while, but not very long. It will usually go away pretty rapidly. They may have a high temperature and that may last a day or two. But very shortly after that, they will get the benefit. They will also have those same things after a second dose. And it may even be that the rate at which it occurs is slightly greater after a second dose. We don't know fully. But we're going to learn a lot.
Going to learn a lot. No thanks. I'm nobody's guinea pig. I don't know about you. They've admitted that the trial for this Pfizer-BioNTech COVID vaccine is going to carry on for 2 years. Anybody taking that vaccine from tomorrow onwards is a guinea pig in an experiment. Are you hearing this? Did you hear what he said about MMR and autism?
We saw this with MMR and autism.
The coincidence now. The coincidence, right?
We saw this with MMR and autism, that when you vaccinate people at around the age that they get autism diagnosed, then you get a coincidence of vaccination followed by autism. And we'll see that again.
And we'll see it again. This is incredible. When you vaccinate somebody with MMR at around about the time that they get autism, it's a coincidence that they got the MMR jab at the same time. And I've never been sensational, me, or a sensationalist, as you well know. Listen again. I'll play this for Vernon Coleman, Dr. Vernon Coleman, in hour two. Listen to what he says here about adverse effects, heart attacks and strokes, for vulnerable people after they get the coronavirus vaccine.
And so we're going to see over the coming days and weeks, we will have reports of deaths following the vaccination.
We will see in the coming weeks, we will have reports of deaths, not sore arms, not an itchy willy or pins and needles in your feet. No, an itchy willy. No, God, no. No, people will die.
There'll be strokes. There'll be heart attacks.
Yeah.
Because we're vaccinating a very vulnerable population.
So don't then. Don't vaccinate them. If their immune systems are in tatters because they're very, very old, they want to give this to people over 80. And anybody who's over 80 has beaten the odds anyway. You know, you've gone past the life expectancy for the UK. But we'll give you a toxic tidal wave of pus and shit. That's what we'll do. Not once, but twice in 21 days. And yeah, sure, a few of you will have strokes and heart attacks because of it. Well, it'll just be a coincidence.
That's why we're doing it, because they are at risk of dying from COVID-19. But sadly, they're also at risk of dying from other things. So one of the key things will be getting people's understanding that lots of these adverse effects are merely coincident.
Yeah, that's fine. Nothing to see here. What would Leslie say? God be with Leslie, eh? What would Leslie say?
All right, move on. Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see here, please.
If you're listening to this program and you know anything about me and my career and what I've done and who I am, you'll tell your grandparents to strongly consider not taking that vaccine. Don't browbeat them. Don't come over all domineering. These lunatics haven't got the first fucking idea what this vaccine is going to do to people. They can't. Because it's only been in boxes. It, from the time they began to think about it to the time they put it in a box, you're only talking about a few months. They haven't a clue. They admit that pregnant women shouldn't have it. They admit that no study was done on how the vaccine might react with somebody taking other medicines. Imagine that. most people on planet Earth, God love them, not me, not you, because we're not stupid. Most people are taking something for something. And they're not going down to Holland and Barrett. They're not getting their totally natural, naturopathic medicine. They're not. No. They're getting it from a chemist. And they admit, the Pfizer-BioNTech people, that no study has been done on how it will react with other medicines. And they admit that the impact on fertility is unknown. Now, that won't affect granny and granddad. But everything else will. Oh, be Jesus. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll have a very quick break. Back in a minute with plenty more. Dr. Vernon Coleman joins me in hour two. This is your Richie Allen Radio Show.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Top man, Mark Bajerski. Love Mark, great guy. Check him out if you haven't before. Follow him on Facebook. Lovely guy. His YouTube channel is brilliant as well. What's going on? What was that? Ah, it's the computer in the background that's shouting at me. Shut up. Shut up, boy. Sorry, there you go. Good job. Tell you what we'll do now. 17 minutes to the top of the hour. I've got some more, well, very interesting things for you to listen to in the next few minutes ahead of Dr. Vernon Coleman. But it's a Monday. Let's have a tune. Yes.
Rugby.
Yes.
Rugby.
I've no shame. Yeah, Falcao was a football player, right? For Brazil. I think so. Falcao. Right, let me read a few tweets then. You kick the backside off me for not reading the tweets out, and you're right. Little Anne says, Richie, I haven't heard Rock Me Amadeus for 100 years. Absolutely brilliant, just like your show. We are very kind, Anne, you shouldn't say that, but if you haven't heard Rock Me Amadeus for 100 years, you better not be taking that vaccine, Anne. Don't touch that vaccine. Hi to Vicky, by the way. Let me scroll on down here. Hi to Fahad. Hi to Stuart, my pal Stuart. How you doing, Stuart? Molly B says, Richie, do you or Dr. Vernon Coleman know? That tweet now has just scrolled up the old page there. Let me bring it back. Molly says, Molly's in Ireland, aren't you, Molly? Do you or Dr. Vernon Coleman have any idea or guesstimate? Now, Molly, if you ever use the word guesstimate or any word like it to me again, I'll slap the living bejesus out of you. I won't beat the granny out of you. I'll give you one chance. We're Irish. We don't use words like that. But anyway, it's a good question. She asks, do we have any idea what percentage of the British people will take the jab? Molly, there have been a number of polls undertaken, or commissioned, I should say, by the UK media. And they vary. One poll says that 30% of those polled are concerned about the speed of the vaccine coming into being, the speed of it arriving, and they will give it a miss. So I don't know. But if one third of those surveyed, and if that's any, if that's, I don't know, if that's an accurate reflection of the overall population of the UK, which is what? 60 plus million, is it? Something like that. Well, that would be incredible. That would be incredible. Hi to David. I used to love this Falco ditty. Remember mixtapes you made for Sunday to 40? Ah, yes. That song featured in a lovely film, that you might have seen, you might not have seen. It's a nice tip from me to thee. If you're stuck for a film sometime, you're looking for something to watch, Adventureland is a movie set in the 1980s. It stars Kristen Stewart, and she was in the vampire movies, wasn't she? And Jesse Eisenberg, who was in the Mark Zuckerberg film. Jesse Eisenberg, who was also in one of the Batman, Superman movies as well. Eisenberg and Stewart, and it's a lovely, lovely, lovely movie. Particularly if, like me, you were born in... I was born in 1974, New Year's Eve 74, so I grew up in the 80s. So watching Adventureland, marvellous. Because I spent most of my summers as a teenager in Tremor, which is 6-7 miles from Waterford City. We used to hitch out there. Hitch, can you imagine that? Thumbing a ride. Molly is like, what's this thumbing a ride shit, Baldy? What did you say to me about guesstimate? You're right, Molly. We would thumb out to Tremore and sit around the waltzers and all that nonsense. So Adventureland's a lovely movie. If you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. There you go. Okay, there are more things to talk about before we hear from Dr. Vernon Coleman, so let's talk about them. Speaking of Ireland, Simon Harris is an Irish politician. He is the former Irish Minister for Health. He now has the higher education brief. He's not a nice man. Think back to his treatment of those injured by Gardasil. Horrible man. Here he is on Irish television on RTE, Radio Teleficharan, yesterday. Simon Harris. They're desperately keen for everybody to get this vaccine, and they're going all out to prevent anybody asking any questions about it, Simon Harris.
And I do just want to, on the political messaging, and this applies to all parties and none, I mean, there can be no room whatsoever for pseudoscience or nonsense or scaremongering. Owen is right. Our citizens will have legitimate and important questions they'll want experts to answer in relation to the vaccine.
But the opposition parties also feel that, you know, they weren't given as many briefings at certain stages in the process, certainly after the change of government.
Well,
I think there were some complaints, weren't there? If that's the case, that
shouldn't be the case. I mean, this we all have to work together in relation to this. But when I read in the weekend newspapers, and we won't name them because they're not here, but different TDs explaining different reasons why they wouldn't take a vaccine, that needs to stop. I get my medical advice from doctors.
Do you hear what he said there? Elected politicians, elected by the people, the sons and daughters of Éireann, the sons and daughters of Éireann elect politicians to go to the Dáil, to the Irish Parliament, and to act on behalf of the people. And some Irish TDs, we say TDs, Chuck de Dola, right, not MP. Our members of parliament are called Chuck de Dola, TDs. And he says they should shut up because a number of them have apparently been on Irish media, local and national, explaining why they won't touch the vaccine.
I mean, this we all have to work together in relation to this. But when I read in the weekend newspapers, and we won't name them because they're not here, but different TDs explaining different reasons why they wouldn't take a vaccine, that needs to stop.
It needs to stop, does it?
I get my medical advice from doctors. That's what I'd want for my family.
Which doctors, though? It's funny, isn't it? It's a very selective thing, isn't it? Isn't it? It's a very subjective, not selective. What's wrong with you, Richie? It's a Monday. Very subjective. I get my information from doctors. But what about the doctors from Harvard University? What about Dr. Sucharit Bhakdi, who was on this programme? And it was on Fox News in America the other day. Legendary epidemiologist. Saying, don't touch the vaccine. So you can be subjective when you want to be about doctors, can't you? Huh? What a little tyrant. TDs should shut up. No, they shouldn't. It's their duty. It's what they were elected to do. If they see something is wrong, if they fear that something might harm their constituents, they should put their hands up and bloody well say it. And that's what they're doing.
In my community, that's what we should all do. And I think we have a role to play in rolling in behind and coming in behind the scientists and the doctors. Mm. Because if we get this right, so many of the things that we've missed this year, we'll be able to begin to imagine and perhaps even experience.
Imagine. If we get this right with the vaccine, we'll be able to imagine the things that we used to like.
So many of the things that we've missed this year, we'll be able to begin to imagine and perhaps even experience next
year. Don't, I'll start crying. I think we'll all start crying if we start thinking about it.
I'll start crying. Do you hear the useless presenter then? Egging him on. Laughing away with him. Oh, don't, I start crying. He's sitting there in front of somebody who's supposed to be a journalist, and he's saying that elected members of the Irish Parliament, the Dáil, should shut the fuck up in terms of telling people why they wouldn't take the vaccine. She's sitting there, oh, don't I start crying now, oh, with the thoughts of, can't wait to get the vaccine, get back to normal. 7 minutes, 6.5 minutes to 6 o'clock. Simon Harris. Yeah. Does anybody know anything about voodoo? No. Let's try voodoo dolls. Surely you can't be arrested for incitement to violence if you're practicing voodoo. Can we get a lock of hair from people like Simon Harris? Not even a lock of his hair. Just pick up a bit of dandruff off the guy's shoulder or something and start playing around with voodoo dolls to put a stop to these people. And I don't mean kill them or seriously injure them, but just play around with them. Voodoo must be the way out of this. Identity politics brought us to this, huh? Richard Tice is the chairman of the Reform UK party, used to be the Brexit party. We heard from Nigel Farage, or Farage, earlier on. It calls itself an anti-lockdown party now. He was on Politics Live on BBC Two this lunchtime with Joe Coburn. It got interesting when Richard Tice began to talk about hospital admission figures and the dreaded PCR test, Richard Tice.
But let's not forget the other side of this in the excitement of the vaccine. You know, let's not forget the flawed strategy with regard to tiers, with lockdowns, which all based, the whole government strategy is based around its confidence in the PCR tests. And there, it is quite clear, evidence is emerging as more and more people are using the lateral flow test. We're seeing it in Liverpool, where just lateral flow tests represented just 1 in 5 of the PCR tests in the same community. Merthyr Tydfil, a hotspot in Wales. Again, as soon as you start losing the lateral flow test, the number of cases plummeting. Universities of Bristol and St Andrews, numbers plummeting. So what I challenge the government, if they've still got confidence in these PCR tests, then let's test it. Let's treble check it with the lateral flow test. Let's take 1,000 people and let's test it with the PCR test, with the lateral flow test, and with a separate, independently processed PCR test. Because if there is significant false positives, that we believe there are, significant contamination in the government's laboratories, then the whole strategy is based on flawed data, and that would be really, really serious.
Mm. Tim, what is the evidence in terms of the accuracy of PCR tests?
This is why I hate the media. Tice has just exposed the wretched PCR testing system and the voluminous false positives. Everything is a false positive. It's dreadful. The reason they find cases is because they use the PCR test. And they find cases in people that are not sick, not even remotely sick. Because the testing is flawed. We've explained it on this programme often. So he does a great job of explaining that. And she asks then Tim to put the record straight. But Tim is Tim Harford. He's an economist. That's all he is. He's not a scientist. She asks Tim Harford, the economist, to answer Richard Tice's assertion, his accurate assertion, that PCR tests are flawed and could bring down the government's case for lockdown. She's asking an economist, can't even say it, an economist. What was his answer, Tim Harford?
Well, PCR tests are substantially more sensitive than lateral flow tests, so I'm not at all surprised that when you test someone with a lateral flow test, you're less likely to come up with a positive test than with a PCR test. I mean, there are, of course, false positives, but I'm surprised to say that the whole strategy is linked to confidence in the PCR test. The government's strategy is designed to stop hospitals being overwhelmed and to reduce the number of deaths. We had more deaths per capita in the UK than almost any other country in the world. It's taken an enormous toll to the British public health. The hospitals, you know, are huge numbers of people going into hospitals. So it's not to do with the tests or the sensitivity of the tests. It is to do with people dying.
Right.
And a lot of people have died in this country. But if you look at the excess deaths,
yes. this year 2020 will turn out to be just above the 30-year average.
Well,
it'll only be about 10%
hang on.
Above.
Hang on, when you look at the excess deaths, hang on a second, Richard. This is from Public Health England, and it says just over 61,000 excess deaths in England, 97.5% of which were due to COVID.
But the reality is, if you look across the whole year, this year will be about 10% higher than the five-year average. It will be in terms of total deaths, OK? So what's happening is that people, I believe, people are being allocated as a COVID-related death, potentially because of the huge number of potentially contaminated false positives coming out of the PCR tests. Why is it, for example, that currently, week on week, respiratory attendances in hospitals are way down, and yet they're being allocated as COVID people? But actually, you expect hospitals and ICU departments to be busy at this time of the year. They're no busier than normal.
Right, sure, but hang on. Well, let Tim respond.
Let him respond. He's right, Richard Tice. I don't have any interest in Richard Tice personally, no more than I do any politician. But he's right. Hospitals are not that busy. They are no more busy now than they would be at this time any other year. So mid-December, early December 2016, 17, 18, 19, they're not at greater occupancy levels now than they were in those years. That's a stone cold fact. And the Daily Mail, God love it for as bad as it is, was able to determine this very recently with a brilliant article with a number of bylines. There are a number of people contributed to it, doctors, scientists. Hospitals are not worse now than they were last year, 2017, 18, whatever. And again, she asks The Economist to contradict Richard Tice.
I don't understand this. There were 67,000 excess deaths.
Forget 67,000 excess deaths. That's not the point that was being made. The point that was being made is hospitals are not under pressure now any more than they were last year, which is true. And Tice already explained the so-called excess deaths because the PCR test is a disaster. People have died with strokes, with heart attacks, with liver failure, with all manner of things, pneumonia, chest infections have killed elderly people. And COVID has been put on the death cert. We know this. But they didn't die of COVID. So stick your death figures where the sun doesn't shine, Mr. Economist. He just had going all around the houses to avoid dealing with what Richard Tice said.
During the small number of weeks of the first wave, the life expectancy in the UK has been rising for decades. So I don't see why we would want to compare excess deaths now to the 30-year average going all the way back to 1990.
Well, it's only 10% above the five-year average.
It's 10% above the five-year average, which is an enormous number of people who have died. And it is partly because of the huge efforts we've all taken. We've all been staying at home. We've all been trying to look after each other, stop the virus spreading. If we had let it spread, many more people would have died.
There are over 30.
Another way of looking at the data is to look at what the Office for National Statistics registrations of deaths has been, with COVID identified as the source of death on the death certificate. And you get a very similar number, maybe 45,000-50,000. I've lost track of the latest.
There are over 30,000 excess deaths of non-COVID patients at home since this crisis began. So the excess deaths that
we're seeing... Where are you getting your data from? Because if we're agreeing...
She's lousy, isn't she? She'll demand that Richard Tice gives her chapter and verse where he has retrieved his data, which is fine. I have no problem with that. But no such examination of the Economist guy, Tim Harford. None whatsoever. He can say whatever he wants. But Tice has to be challenged on the paperwork. Like I said, I have no problems. I would be asking Tice, where does he get his numbers? But I would ask the other dude as well. So it works.
If we're agreeing that the data is what is important, you can't dismiss what Public Health England have said in terms of the number of excess deaths, the vast majority with, are due to COVID.
Well, it's also in the ONS data, the excess deaths at home compared to the five-year average. So it's different parts of ONS data, but, you know, it's there for people to see. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, I believe the real crisis is the government's total reliance and trust in this PCR data. And if I'm right, that there are a significant number of false positives, then this government strategy is flawed. And I come back to the point, hospitals and ICU departments are no busier across the country than they normally are at this time of the year.
Well said. It's a massive scam. You know, why more people can't see it? But it is. Wait till I give you a giggle. Caroline Noakes is a Conservative MP. She was on the very same show, on the same panel. virtually. She was at home on Skype, but she was there speaking with Richard Tice and the Economist guy. "We shouldn't be relaxing restrictions now," she said. "Think of the poor NHS workers." It's what she says after that that beggars belief.
NHS staff, our brilliant frontline workers, have been working incredibly hard over months and months and months. They are exhausted. So to take unnecessary risks with the NHS now strikes me as being extremely foolhardy. So that's why I supported the measures last week. I've seen my area go into tier two, where there are still restrictions on the way people can go about their lives. But I've kept my parents locked up since March, literally locked up. I've done all of their shopping for them. I have run every errand and at one point parked my car over their driveway so that they couldn't get out, because I'm absolutely determined that they are not going to increase the burden on our brilliant health service.
What?
What kind of fuckery is this?
What did she say there? I mean, somebody called the police.
But I've kept my parents locked up since March, literally locked up. I've done all of their shopping for them. I have run every errand and at one point parked my car over their driveway so that they couldn't get out, because I'm absolutely determined that they are not going to increase the burden on our brilliant health service.
I parked my car over their driveway so they couldn't get out. Her parents presumably paid their way. Like everybody else, they paid tax and they paid national insurance all their lives. Why? So there would be health care at the point they needed it. Now they're in retirement and Caroline Noakes is locking them up and blocking their driveway so that they won't be a burden on the health service. Today is one of those days. You think I didn't hear that?
But I've kept my parents locked up since March. Literally locked up. I've done all of their shopping for them. I have run every errand and at one point parked my car over their driveway so that they couldn't get out, because I'm absolutely determined that they are not going to increase the burden on our brilliant health service.
I'm determined that they're not going to increase the burden on our brilliant health service, she said. It's 6:05. It's 6:05. Depends on where you are in Ireland. They'll say things like it's 6:05. Hi, John Heffernan. How you doing, John? Nice to hear from you, pal. The Irish are out in force today. It's time for headlines from FSN with the headlines on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Dr. Vernon Coleman will be with me right soon. Here's the news.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Simon Marks. A third recount in the US state of Georgia has shown again that Joe Biden won the state in the US election. Brexit talks continue between UK and EU officials in Brussels. There's no sign yet of any breakthrough. And Bob Dylan has sold the rights to his entire back catalogue of songs to Universal Music Group in a deal reportedly worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
Thank you very much, Simon. My great friend Spiros Skouras has made me giggle. He's made me chuckle. He says, sounds like payback for her childhood. Caroline Noakes, the MP, payback for her childhood, keeping her parents locked up. Locking them up, blocking the driveway with her car so that they wouldn't become a burden on the NHS. He couldn't make it up. He actually couldn't make much of what we're hearing up. Hi to Salts. Hi to Salts, who's in Melbourne. Unusually chilly here. Must be global warning, says Salts. It's very early in the morning in Melbourne. You're up bright and early, Salts. You might have a bit of insomnia like myself. While Vernon is getting ready to come on the programme, the Dr. Vernon Coleman, played this on Friday because it was released on Friday. I want to play it again because I love it and I love them. Richard and Fred from Right Said Fred, top lads. This is We're All Criminals Now. We're all criminals from Right Said Fred. Go to rightsaidfred.com, by the way, to find out how to pick it up. Terrific tune, that great anti-lockdown tune from the Freds. And do follow them on Twitter as well if you haven't already. It's at the Freds on Twitter. Great lads. Must get them back on. Had a lovely conversation with them. We had a lovely chat with them, didn't we, a few weeks ago. And they also put in a stirring performance, an excellent performance, in an interview they gave to Kay Burley on Sky News a couple of weeks ago to promote the single, but also to talk about why they're anti-lockdown. And to be fair to Kay, she gave them room. And the lads were, as you would expect, as they were here, brilliantly articulate and had some terrific answers. So well done. The Freds, who have popped up at one or two of the protests in London as well, as we talked about last time they were on the programme. We're waiting for Dr. Vernon Coleman, the one and only vernoncoleman.co.uk. Should be with us any minute. Keep the tweets coming in at Richie Allen Show. While we're waiting for Vernon, let me just tell you that the YouTube channel for this programme probably won't be around for much longer, because a second upload was deleted on Friday, I think, or maybe Saturday, maybe Friday. And when they do a third one, they delete the channel entirely. And no big deal. We're not going to complain about that. We're not going to whinge about it. It is what it is, and it's what they do. So I expect it to be deleted. If it isn't deleted, I would be allowed to upload again in 2 weeks, but I'm not going to. I am finally done with it now. What I might do, actually, changes his mind more than he changes his knickers, does the BBG. What I might do is I might put a very short video on YouTube explaining to people, because some people are hopelessly lost. Lost with all hands, as the great Kevin Myers might say. Some people are hopelessly lost, that if they don't get it on YouTube, they don't get it anywhere. They can't manage to find a podcast. And I think there is such a thing as YouTube addiction. Excuse me. I believe that addiction to YouTube is a real thing. I'm gonna look into it. Let's welcome back then, without further ado, the great Dr. Vernon Coleman. Vernon, welcome back to the programme. What sort of a week have you had since we spoke last?
A very, very, very interesting week, Richie, which got even more interesting a moment ago when I tried to use my phone and found they'd cut it off again.
No way.
So I'm on a mobile because they haven't managed to find out which one that is. Unbelievable.
Do you want me to bell you back on that?
No, it's all right, mate.
Are you sure?
Absolutely. The what has astonished me this week is the level of deceit and lying and general crookedness just seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. I was listening to the program a bit earlier, and the guy that you had on, I'm sorry, I've forgotten his name, but the guy you had on was talking about autism.
Yeah.
And using Andrew Wakefield as the only evidence that autism is ever linked to vaccination. I think maybe he should take a look at a paper which has just a month or so ago been published in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health, which concluded, open quotes, "The data indicate that unvaccinated children in the practice are not unhealthier than the vaccinated, and indeed the overall results may indicate that unvaccinated pediatric patients are healthier overall than the vaccinated."
That's bombshell stuff, isn't it?
It is. And in fact, it's not the first time. I did a book on vaccines, and a few years ago, similar research had been done previously. And if you look at the figures for autism show that the autism has massively increased. And if you look at the graph, at the rate at which autism has increased, and you compare it with a graph at the rate at which vaccination, particularly MMR, but also other vaccinations, have increased, guess what? They sort of match. They also found, by the way, in the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health, that there was that unvaccinated patients developed less attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD. Now, I would have thought that people going on the wireless would look these things up, because that is very significant. And it basically is another, if you'll pardon the expression, nail in the coffin of those who say that vaccines are always safe and effective, because they're patently not. Otherwise, why is the American taxpayers, because the drug companies are protected, paid out $4 billion in compensation to people who've been badly injured by vaccines? But the thing that really, that was an aside, just because of that guy that you quoted. The thing that really shocked me to the foundations this week was the discovery that the whole thing around the Pfizer vaccine. We all know that Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has got a chunky-sized investment in Pfizer.
Yeah.
We all know that Pfizer is has just been given the first permission to flog their vaccine to the long-suffering British public. But what absolutely appalled me is that the MHRA, the Medicines Healthcare Products Liability Regulatory Agency, which is the first regulator in the world to approve the vaccine, and originally Fauci said he thought they'd rushed it, and then afterwards, immediately afterwards, oh dear, no, did I say that? Gosh, what a surprise, that was a mistake. Anyway, the Bill and Melinda Gates, prior to all this, or after Gates' foundation had got money in Pfizer, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation entered into what we can call a financial arrangement with the MHRA. That's the bit of the UK government which regulates medicines and which approved the Pfizer vaccine. And remember that Bill and Melinda Gates have got shares in Pfizer. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation handed over to the government department which regulates and approves vaccines £980,000. Why they didn't make it around million, I don't know. But they handed that money over to the MHRA, which then, not very long later, says, oh gosh, your vaccine's wonderful. Yeah. Is that okay, Mr. Gates? It's like you take in a driving test and you give the examiner a bung and you say, of course, this bung has got nothing whatsoever to do with the driving test I'm about to take.
But let's
hope. And you take the driving test, you hit a buzz, you run over a couple of old ladies, and they pass. The driving examiner says, that's wonderful, you passed. What does it look like? What are these people up to?
I know what upsets you. I know why you're upset by that more than anything. Because it would have only taken a BBC producer 30 seconds to look up the professor or Dr. June Rain and any links to Bill Gates, and they would have found that information in a few seconds. And you've got to go to air with that, don't you? You've got to tell people that.
Absolutely. I mean, not all that long ago, I can remember when the Sunday Times had a huge scoop on thalidomide. I can remember doing similar things with the benzodiazepine drugs when I exposed what problems there were with those. And the government actually announced in the Commons, unbelievably, that they were changing the regulations because of the articles I'd written. No papers are doing that anymore, and I don't think they ever will. We've reached the point where the media has been so totally bought. And incidentally, this is not an entirely new thing. It's been happening gradually over the years. Back in the 70s and the 80s, I used to write columns all over the place, and I wrote one that went to local newspapers. And after I wrote an article about vaccination, just questioning what was happening then in the 70s and 80s, and loads of local medical officers rang up the local paper and said, we'd like to write a column for you. And the papers cancelled my column because these local medical officers were writing it for free. I wrote a column for a big Chinese newspaper a few years ago, did a column on vaccination. The publishers, the newspaper fired me because I wouldn't withdraw. They said, please withdraw it and do something else. I said, no, that's the one I want to write. So they fired me. So then my Chinese publishers, who were selling huge quantities of my books over there, they dumped me and told me that no other publishers in China were then allowed to have foreign people writing medical books for circulation in China. It's happening, been happening for some time. This control over medical issues, but particularly about vaccination. And the stuff, the lies they're telling about this Pfizer stuff is unbelievable.
Can we come to some of that now in a sec? Before we come to some of this, Dr. Vernon Coleman, vernoncoleman.com, the information you gave us earlier on about the unvaccinated, the healthier children, and what you said about the MMR jab, will that be available on the website vernoncoleman.com for people to grab it?
I'll put the details on when we get round to it, but only because we haven't got staff. But I'll tell you the title again. It's the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health. If I don't find my... I have actually... I ventured into the modern world and I've got myself one of these iPad things.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody else calls them iPads, but that's just because they pronounce them wrongly. Anyway, I've got one of these iPad things. Hang on, I'll see if I can find it.
You've got one of those, because every time you send me an email, it says at the bottom of it, sent through my iPad or iPad. And you're just being, that's what it says, you're just being curmudgeonly now. I have a granddad like that.
It's a speciality.
It's a speciality. Can I ask you this? You mentioned Professor Stephen Evans, and he is a pharmacoepidemiology person. He's a professor of pharmacoepidemiology, tropical medicine, London. Was I over-egging the pudding, if you did listen to some of the monologue, when I was taken aback by what he said about we will see deaths, heart attacks and strokes when the vaccine is administered, but people need to know that it's a coincidence. Was I wrong to get excited about that? Because I can play that clip back now. It's only 30 seconds.
No, I heard it. And I tell you what, I had previously said that what they will do, and I still believe this is the case, is they will blame all these unpleasant side effects. I'll stop looking at the iPad. I'll email you the reference. They will blame all the nasty side effects on COVID, and they'll say, "Oh, all these people are suffering from COVID. We've got more deaths from COVID." They will never admit that the deaths and the problems. I've been looking into this stuff, and mRNA, messenger RNA, which reprograms human cells to make foreign protein, the number of side effects, I mean, you exposed the side effect problem with infertility. And of course, there is a problem that women, they're saying to women, you mustn't have the vaccine if you're going to be pregnant within the next 3 months. An awful lot of women don't know they're pregnant, yeah, or they will get pregnant. What's going to happen to them? The problem is that the side effects, I think the side effects will probably be not just infertility, but neurological allergy responses, autoimmune, increased vulnerability to viruses. There was one paper which said there was a possibility of increased vulnerability to HIV. I think that was in The Lancet. All this is going to be blamed on COVID-19. It's a massive experiment. The Nazis would have been reluctant to put an experiment this bad on so many people.
Vernon? Do you know what?
And why is the second vaccination so important?
Yeah.
Is that so that the first one doesn't seem to cause too much problem? But nobody seems to know anything about this, and they haven't done animal experiments this time. Now, that doesn't matter terribly much, but the previous RNA experiments, there's one product, I'll tell you about it in a minute, but they did some animal experiments previously with nanoparticles and messenger RNA and so on. But the animal experiments are useless. Even the drug industry admits that animal experiments are useless. On my website, there's around 50 drugs I named which cause cancer and other serious diseases and kill animals, but they're sold for people. They're sold for patients. And if you question the drug industry, they say with a straight face, "Oh, well, animals are different to people, aren't they?" That is the total proof that animal experiments are only done just to get stuff through the regulators. But they were excused animal experiments because the regulators know they're useless. And so they've got these new drugs which they're going to test and keep records for 2 years. What sort of idiots would take a vaccine that is potentially so dangerous for a disease which is known and recognized around the world to be no more serious than the flu?
Yeah.
And all the figures suggest it's no more serious than the flu. Amongst the elderly, okay, over 80s, there's a much higher death rate because the over 80s always die from the flu.
If they were here, Vernon, they would say, we've noticed two things that make it different from the flu. We've noticed this phenomenon called long COVID, which leaves people with debilitating chronic illness for months afterwards. And they've recently said that they found that COVID can leave people with damage to lung tissue. Now, much as I do like and admire you, I have people that are constantly saying to me, "Richie, do your job, point these things out to people like Vernon." I do as best as I can. But they would say if they were here, they would say long COVID is a serious thing and COVID is more damaging to lung tissue than the flu ever was. That's what they're saying.
Yeah, well, the response to that is that long COVID is not something that's exclusive to COVID-19. It's something that happens with all viral infections. And I would suspect a lot of people will know of those who had the flu and who were then quite ill for months afterwards because they had long flu. They're just calling it long COVID because they're trying to make it sound more dramatic. The thing about lung tissue is that the problem with COVID-19, this is being blamed on COVID-19, is that in fact the big problem is not the viral infection so much as the bacterial infection. And a lot of the old people who died in care homes and nursing homes and wherever died because they didn't receive antibiotics. And Fauci has confirmed that one of the big problems with viral chest infections is the bacterial superinfection, the bacterial infection you get on top of the viral infection, and that can be treated with antibiotics. But they haven't been giving people antibiotics because they didn't recognize that before, or they didn't want to recognize that before. So the arguments that COVID is terribly special are rubbish. The truth is that the flu can kill up to round about 650,000 pounds, 650,000 people in a not terribly unnormal year. 650,000. You add up, and that's between October and March, April. Now, they're running now a running total on COVID-19. And I know it's got more than that, but they're running a running total. And we know they're cheating. They've cheated all the way along the line. The Ferguson forecasts were wrong. The Witte Valance forecasts were wrong. The testing is known by just about every doctor who doesn't work for the government to be an absolute load of nonsense, because they, apart from anything else, they're putting the tests through too many cycles. And what you're picking up are these old flu virus bits and pieces, which means that more false positives, and I don't care what the economists say, the facts show that there are more false positives than real positives. So the test is useless. The figures, every country in the world has admitted, Italy was the first country to admit that their figures for deaths from COVID-19 were rubbish. The Americans admitted that 94%, I think it was, had comorbidities. In other words, there were people over 80 who had serious diseases, heart disease, cancer, whatever, and they died. And because they'd had COVID, they were put down as COVID. And in this country, they've now reduced it. If you get hit on the head by somebody with an axe and you happen to test positive for COVID within 28 days of testing positive, you died of COVID. That's what's on your death certificate. Because doctors can put whatever the hell they like on them. Pathologists don't do post-mortems because it's too scary. They were managing quite well with everything else. The number of problems with these just goes on and on and on. And the only RNA-type medication I've found that's on the market at the moment is something called patisiran, which is used for amyloidosis, which is incredibly rare. And the risks with that, the risks with the disease, heart block in 2.7% of patients, URTI, upper respiratory tract infections in 29%, and muscle spasms. Now, I have absolutely no idea whether any of the side effects that you get with this RNA type, the patisiran, whether they're possible with the vaccine. But I can tell you that one of the side effects with this other RNA-type medication is muscle spasms. And I can also tell you that one of the side effects with at least one of the new RNA vaccines is muscle spasms, because one bloke had such bad muscle spasms that he broke a tooth. So what's the rush? Why is this desperate attempt to get everybody to take a vaccine which nobody needs, because the disease isn't that bad, but the vaccine might be? We just don't know. We have no idea what the side effects are. Your dogs know as much as anybody else what the side effects are going to be, because they're doing an experiment. Yeah. And anybody who wants deliberately to take an experimental vaccine for a disease, COVID-19, which does kill a number of people over 80, just like the flu does, well, to be honest, they must be start raving bonkers.
And they're queuing up for it.
Why on earth would you do that?
They're queuing up for it. This is the thing. And I don't want to be negative. Dr. Vernon Coleman is our guest, vernoncoleman.com. they're queuing up. Lots of comments coming in. Before we get to one or two of the comments, and it's a really good question for you, I want you to hear this 30 seconds again, because I found it fairly spooky now, from the pharmacoepidemiologist in London.
And you're saying that awfully well now.
I know, yeah, I struggled with it earlier on. I've been practicing during the musical breaks. I've been practicing hard. Well, I've got to live up to you, don't I? You coming on, Dr. Vernon Coleman. Right, here he is then, Stephen. What's this gentleman's surname again, so I can do him some credit? Stephen Evans, professor, as I said, of pharmacoepidemiology in London. Yes, tropical medicine. Here we go, listen.
And so we're going to see over the coming days and weeks, we will have reports of deaths following the vaccination. There'll be strokes, there'll be heart attacks, because we're vaccinating a very vulnerable population. That's why we're doing it, because they are at risk of dying from COVID-19. But sadly, they're also at risk of dying from other things. So one of the key things will be getting people's understanding that lots of these adverse effects are merely coincidental.
Yeah, you see, I'm obviously a novice. I'm not even a novice. I'm a layman. I don't know anything, really, when it comes down to it. But to me, it sounded very much like this guy said, once we start giving this vaccine, there will be heart attacks and strokes. And believe me, it's a coincidence.
Shall I tell you what you do? It's dead simple. You take the names and details, which they will do, of all the people who have been vaccinated, and you measure the adverse effects. And you compare that with the adverse effects, in other words, with the diseases that have been suffered by people who weren't vaccinated. It's a doddle. It's the simplest piece of research you can possibly do. And I bet you they don't do it. What they find, I don't know, 10,000 people all in their 80s, and they're giving this stuff to disabled children and elderly patients, which seems a bit Nazi to me, but there you go. They're giving the stuff to these people. All you do is you get 10,000 people who have, say, 10,000 people all in their 80s, all who have been vaccinated, and you measure how many comorbidity deaths there were, how many died of whatever, and how many got serious neurological problems, or how many got viral infections, and you measure that against 10,000 80-odd-year-olds who weren't vaccinated, and you see what the difference is in the number of people in the two groups.
Very
it's
simple.
The simplest piece of clinical research you can imagine. It would cost pennies. It would cost nothing compared to the amount of money this government's been wasting on all sorts of bizarre projects. But that would prove once and for all just how dangerous the vaccine would be. And I challenge the government to actually set up a proper, simple research project which will measure the problems that are being that are going to inevitably happen as a result of people having the vaccine. Simple,
yes, brilliant.
Simple,
nice
cheap.
And simple. I bet you're delighted that Caroline Noakes, the Conservative MP, is not your daughter. This is 15 seconds long. I can't believe my ears today, to be honest. Have a listen.
But I've kept my parents locked up since March. Literally locked up. I've done all of their shopping for them. I have run every errand and at one point parked my car over their driveway so that they couldn't get out, because I'm absolutely determined that they are not going to increase the burden on our brilliant health service.
Yeah, she's falsely imprisoned her parents, Vernon. And she
what a nice lady. Gods. Where do they find these people?
Yeah.
Do they dig them out of the ground? Do they go into coffins in the night time? The media is just so bent. I've got a good thing going here. I'm trying to buy, because I can't get on any of the mainstream media, I'm trying to buy ads on talk radio.
Are you?
I've been negotiating with this guy all day for me to buy advertising space.
Brilliant.
On Ian Collins's program, so that I, even though I can't get interviewed, I can buy ads and appear every quarter of an hour on his program saying what a load of rubbish he's talking and how dangerous vaccine is. Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't that be lovely? I'd love to hear the rates. It'd be nice to hear what the rates are, because surely they'll send you a rate card. But again,
The rates. They don't have a rate card, they tell me, which seems a bit bizarre, but they said they don't have a rate card. I can tell you the rates if you like.
Go on, tell us for the crack. What are the rates?
Well, you know, to get they have a minimum spend of $5,000, but for 800 and something quid, I can have 20, 30-second spots on Collins's programme through the week.
VernonColeman.com, sponsoring the Ian Collins programme, which he can't get on. Now, if Collins was here, Ian Collins, and I like Ian as a broadcaster, even though I don't agree with a lot of what he says, but that doesn't matter. But he's a very competent broadcaster, very skilled in some ways. He would say again, listen, Coleman, we've invited you on, but you, no, look, I don't want to go over this ground again, but I'm just saying it because I know that he listens sometimes. So I'm saying it just because he would say, but I know the truth. I know that you would be expected to be on a panel and ultimately you wouldn't get very much time at all, and that's no good. So,
absolutely. If he wants me on straight man to man, as they might say, with no holds barred on vaccines and stuff, then that's one thing. But sticking me on a panel with however many other people so that I get a little whisper every now and again is an utterly pointless exercise. And then they get to say, oh, well, we had Vernon Coleman on, we let him come on the programme, but that's not letting me on the programme. I've been doing radio and television for 50 years, and I haven't done anything like a panel for about 40 of those years because it's a complete waste of time. It's an easy way for the producer to stitch you up. So I'll stick with having some ads. If they don't want me on, I'll try and get some ads. I've got to get all sorts of approval. That doesn't sound very easy.
No,
likely either.
I'm expecting somebody to get on the old dog and bone and say, Dr. Coleman, listen, thanks for your inquiry, but we can't proceed with your advertising. I think that's how it's going to go, I think. But anyway, great idea.
I think so too. But it'll be good fun anyway to see what happens.
You have a wicked sense of humour. Most of the times that you come on and spend a bit of time here with us, I get bombarded by people saying, I wish to be Jesus, this gentleman was my doctor. And my family doctor is very like you. A great character, massively funny sense of humour, and an all-round really good human being. So it shines through my listeners that, oh, Rich, I'd love it if Vernon. And I didn't realise, I say to them, look, Vernon practiced for 10 or so years and spent, you know, most of the time since then writing and talking and stuff like that. But no, it's good to have you on. You brighten the mood because people are depressed. And just before we kind of went off on a tangent there, which is what I do sometimes, to play those clips, talk about... The fact is, we saw those photographs today of these little cards. Now, it looks like a passport to me, Vernon. They say it isn't. They say it's an appointment card, a reminder card. But yet, at the same time, on those same programmes, people like James Cleverly, the Foreign Office Minister, is saying, yeah, we can use them to kind of open things up again. So they do want people to keep the I got me two jabs card. And that might then be entry to the cinema, or it might be, I'm sorry, son, you ain't coming in.
Of course they will. That was I never thought that the vaccine was going to open anything up by itself. The vaccine is just a means to an end. The masks were never going to stop. They were always going to want us to keep wearing the masks because the masks, they know damn well that the masks do more harm than good physically. They know that they're useless. They don't protect you from anything. They know that they actually make people ill. But they want people to wear the masks because the masks are part of the subjugation. They're part of the control. They're part of the obedience program. They're part of the Agenda 21, which makes me sound like a lunatic. But I've checked it all out, and it's real, and you know it is too.
Yeah.
The whole thing with the climate change back in the 90s, Club of Rome, developing slowly, slowly. And the vaccines, they never really thought the vaccines. I mean, Johnson was saying, oh, we have the vaccines, everything will be all right by Christmas, everything will be all right. By Easter, it is not. Once they've got people wearing masks out of doors, and in a lot of parts of the world, they are making people wear masks out of doors. They're making people wear masks indoors in parts of America.
Yeah.
They're making people, not indoors, in their own homes. So once they've got all these people doing this, and it's like Simon says, isn't it? They'll have people doing anything they like, and they will. The vaccines, so many vaccines a year, will be on your little card, and then they'll be on a chip under your skin, or they'll do a tattoo. My original thought back in, I think it was March, I thought they would have a tattoo just because it has that sort of nasty ring to it. But yeah. Why wouldn't they? The whole sick approach to this, the way they have created a pandemic. They've created a pandemic. The number of doctors who now agree that this is such a load of dangerous nonsense, that it's the flu relabeled, or whatever you want to, however you want to call it. As I say, as I keep saying, 650,000 people dying in a year of the ordinary, common garden, unmarketed flu between October and end of April. And you look at the number, the total number now, despite the way that they've managed to fiddle the figures. And the Americans are saying, oh, well, we might get so many people dying every week during the winter. But you won't get any people dying from flu, will you? Because the number of people who died of flu in Britain between January and August, I think, was 400. Well, you would normally expect that to have, I don't know, 30 times as big as that, because all the people who would have died of flu are now dying of COVID-19, because COVID-19 is the great excuse to take us down the path to masks, social distancing, hand sanitizers, which do an enormous amount of harm, of course.
Yeah, you don't like them, ones. Yeah.
There's, the FDA in America, as I've said before on here, has banned about 170, 180 different types of hand sanitizer because they're so dangerous. People are actually drinking the stuff because they think, because it's got alcohol in, which it has. And the number of illnesses which have been caused by the lockdowns, every day I come across more horrendous figures about the number of illnesses which are caused, the number of cancer cases that haven't been investigated, the number of breast cancer cases that haven't been investigated, the number of people dying of heart disease, undiagnosed, the economic problems which are causing health problems, the number of kids who are not... Tens of millions of kids will never go back to school again. Even the United Nations, or at least a part of it, has talked about the hundreds of millions in various parts of Africa, which are in various countries in Africa, which are where there's massive amounts of starvation increased because of this, because of all the lockdowns and the effect it's had on every aspect of life. The number of people who are going bust, the number of people who are committing suicide. Sorry, suicide doesn't happen anymore. People die of COVID-19.
COVID-19.
The number in America, the American Institute of Economic Research found months ago that 40% of adults were already struggling with substance abuse and health issues because of the lockdowns. Suicide risks up three or four times. Manslaughter, murder, property crimes have all soared in America. In America, they reckon 40% of restaurants are going to close almost immediately and more later. The whole of our economy has been destroyed deliberately. And to anybody who says, why would they destroy the economy? Just look at how rich the billionaires have got during the last 6 months. The Bill Gates, all the rest of them, they've all become incredibly rich while everyone else has become incredibly poor. What a coincidence that is. This is a takeover of every aspect of our lives, and it's all part of the social credit score.
That's what's coming,
you know, the thing the Chinese do so well, and which we're already developing, because part of the social credit is, if you have your vaccination, we'll let you into the restaurant. If you don't have your vaccination, we won't let you into the restaurant. If you have your vaccination, we'll let you have your mortgage at a special rate. If you don't have the vaccination, we won't. And so on and so on. If you've only got to look at all the stuff the Chinese are doing, and don't forget that China is now the sort of default society, the one we've all got to aim to match. In China, you lose points. You start off, I think, with 1,000 points, and you get extra points if you have your vaccinations, if you give blood, if you volunteer for charity, if you don't throw away any food, and then you lose points if you spend money frivolously, if you get overweight, if you own land, if you live in your own house, if you don't have a smart meter, if you're chronically sick. All of these things are what is happening now, and all of these things are going to happen to us as well. And people have got to wake up, because if people don't start jumping up and down. I know you can't legally protest. I know you can't do all sorts of things, but you can send papers and leaflets around, and you can send videos and free books and so on to MPs and to journalists, and if nothing else, to try and embarrass them into realizing what awful things are happening. Children and young people have all been brainwashed into believing that vaccines are essential. That's what they've been doing at school, in schools, for years and years and years. And now it really depends on people who are probably over 40 now, because they're more able to see the problems with all this because they're more open-minded, whereas kids have been indoctrinated to believe in the EU, indoctrinated to believe in all the aspects of climate change, and indoctrinated to believe in all sorts of terrible things. And the fact that all these kids have been indoctrinated makes it more difficult and puts more onus on those of us who are a bit older, a bit more experienced, and a bit more able to see that what's happening is that we're just being lied to. We're being deceived, and we're being manipulated, and we're being brainwashed by a media which is now totally subservient to governments, lobby industries, and all the rest of it. And unless we fight back, we don't have a future. We don't have any freedom. We don't have any humanity. We will never be able to go out without the masks. And if we don't have the vaccines, you and I are not having the vaccines. I know loads of people who aren't having the vaccines. I heard somebody say on one of those clips that you played that 20%, it's a lot higher than that. The most of the surveys I've seen suggest that in this country and in America, around half the people who've been asked to say, I don't want that, thanks very much. We have to spread it around. The truth, that's all. We don't need to
manipulate, lie or to exaggerate.
Like the government's doing. We just share the truth.
What do you think will happen then? What do you think will happen if you're right, and you might very well be right? Somebody did say 20%, you're spot on. It was the Sky News presenter, Colin Brazier. But other newspaper commissioned polls said 30% or thereabouts. You might very well be right. It might be closer to 40, even to 50%. What's the likely reaction from the government if so many people say, no, thank you, I'll wait and see, it's too soon? What would they do? What do you think they might do?
Well, the obvious thing is they'll go plain mandatory. The next obvious thing is that they'll say, well, we're not going to make it mandatory, but you can't go into a shop unless you've had the vaccine. And there are already shops and restaurants which are saying, well, when you have the vaccine, we'll let you in, or we'll give you a bonus or something. This is social credit.
And I think
we should all be boycotting any shop that says you need to have hand sanitizer, you need to have a mask, you need to have a vaccine. Boycott it. Make them suffer in the way that they want us to suffer, because that's going to be the next step. They've been thinking about this and planning this for a long, long time. And as I said earlier on, they've been banning the availability of information about all sorts of these things for a long, long time. And now they're just getting very, very good at it. What a coincidence that my phone, my landline, only ever stops working when I'm trying to talk to you. Rest of the time it works fine, but I try to talk to you, I have to do it on a mobile, because the landline, suddenly no signal.
They've been doing that to you for years though, haven't they? And I know when somebody is genuine and when they're not, and I know you're telling the truth. Yeah, it's pathetic is what it is. And that censorship we're seeing everywhere. Independent content creators, the ones that are doing it properly and they're doing it fairly, like yourself. I mean, I watch An Old Man in a Chair on brandnewtube.com. I don't miss any of the episodes. And, you know, it's easy for me to sit there while you're speaking and to cross-reference something that I'm not familiar with. And I don't think on one occasion in the you've been doing it for 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 months maybe, the show, but I've probably seen 95% of them. At no time have you said anything that anybody could say, well, that's a lie there, or that's misinformation. So it's egregious, the censorship. The nonsense you had on YouTube, it's dreadful. And that's going to get worse in the coming weeks. It's going to get very serious.
I just got unbanned again. They banned me for a while, threatened to take the whole thing down, and they've taken half of the videos down now.
Yeah.
The reason I use a clipboard, and I think some people probably laugh, the reason I use a clipboard and a script when I do those videos is quite. I did the first one back in March without a script. And the reason I use a script for them all is because I know exactly what I'm going to say. And I listen to them all, really tedious game that is, but I listen to them when I've recorded them and check them against the script, because it's so easy to make a slip of the tongue, make a mistake. I've done it on your show, and I regret that enormously once. But it's easy to make a slip of the tongue, but when you've got a script, it's a lot easier to be accurate and to say, this person, this percentage, this price, or whatever, and to make sure that you get it right, because it's important, because they're lying, and I find that very important that we make sure that we get things as absolutely spot on as we can. All of us are, you know, on this side of the fence, and it's not always easy, because it's not easy to find the truth, because you've got all these fake fact checkers who, incidentally, when you trace them back, you found one of the biggest fact checkers. I was trying to find out, where did they get their money from? And I was absolutely really surprised when I found that these fact checkers got most of their money from Google, YouTube and Facebook. What a surprise that was. And you find the other thing you find among the fact checkers is, our sponsors include Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Thank you so much to Bill and Melinda for their helpful, like the BBC and The Guardian, have financial links.
Yeah.
What the devil is the BBC? I mean, The Guardian's a write-off, but what the devil is the BBC? Are they not stealing enough money from the poor sods who give them pay the licence fee? Another reminder, please don't pay the licence fee. If you do, you're buying the bullet to kill your family. Don't pay the damned licence fee. It's perfectly easy to do legally.
The Richie Allen Show would like to disassociate itself from those remarks by Dr. Vernon Coleman. If,
I did say legally, you see.
No, you did. You said legally, to be fair, yeah. I don't have one, and I don't say that to brag or to be big. I don't have one, and I've never had one either. Well, can I just say this, by the way?
Sorry, we agreed last week.
Yeah.
If you don't pay the license, you get this lovely letter every week. This Hammer House of Horrors letter.
That's right.
Threatening you with all sorts of good things.
It's nice to be liked. It's nice to be wanted. Deb.
It is.
Debs asks a very interesting question. I like Deb's question. I wouldn't ask it because I would think that I might be. I'm not trying to insult Debs now. I wouldn't ask this question in case you said to me that's a stupid question. But there's no such thing as a stupid question. And I think Debs' question is very good. She says, in the near future, with this mRNA being a brand new vaccine, the first of its kind, should the unvaccinated person be worried about a blood transfusion from somebody who's had the mRNA jabs?
It's a very good point. And what the government should be doing, of course, is because they're alleged to be still testing people for 2 years, isn't it, after they've had the vaccine, they're going to keep a record, rather, of people. They should not allow those people to give blood to put into the blood transfusion system, because we simply don't know.
Yeah.
An awful lot of stuff hasn't been released. I don't think GPs are going to know. And incidentally, there was one survey. A friend of mine, Dr. Colin Barron, revealed a survey. 40% of GPs said they would not take the vaccine.
Jesus.
40% of GPs
don't want
that they wouldn't take it, and they're getting paid over 12 quid a jab. So 24 quid for two jabs. 24 quid average practice size, say 2,500. Multiply 2,500 by 12 and a half quid. What's that? 30 grand. 30 grand, thank you very much. And the nurse gives the jabs. That's not a bad game, is
nice
it?
We've got to
count what's your bank account, I suppose, and look at your statement.
We're about 2 minutes before we run out of time, by the way. Obviously, you're going to have the final word anyway. Just before you do have the final word, I'm going to again plug An Old Man in a Chair is on brandnewtube.com, which, to be fair, it seems to be, to me, looking from the outside looking in, is a great place for uncensored content where people like Vernon can go and not worry about the videos being taken down. So congratulations to everybody at brandnewtube.com. Go there, but do link to vernoncoleman.com and check it out. And buy Vernon's books as well, by the way. Final word to you, and great thanks again for coming back on. It's a do you know what it is, every? It's a tonic. Thanks very much.
It's a pleasure, Richie. Yet the Brand New Tube have been brilliant to me. No complaints whatsoever. Some people complain they're a bit clunky compared to YouTube, but I suspect YouTube, Google's got probably slightly more money than the guys running Brand New Tube. I have never had any censorship problems. I don't know anyone who has with Brand New Tube, and they've been very civil and very kind and very good. And as before anybody asks, there's no money changing hands. I'm not getting paid or giving them any money or anything. And my two latest books, one's called COVID-19, The Greatest Hoax in History, and the other one's called Proof That Masks Do More Harm Than Good. And this is the craziest plug on the radio you'll ever hear, because both books are available free on my website and also on the lightpaper.co.uk website.
Thank you for saying that. About the light paper, because I forgot. I wanted to mention Darren and the light paper. So thanks for saying that. Thelightpaper.co.uk, brand new, not brand new, but recently into publication. Great, great newspaper. I've got a couple of copies of it here. It's terrific. So thanks for reminding me.
It's brilliant, brilliant paper. You can subscribe and get the paper thing. So I subscribed. What was I going to say? You can get the books off there. They've got the books on there, and I've got the books on my website, and they cost the vast sum of free.
yeah, love it.
And just download them and read them. The proof that I'm still trying to find a way, because it's so difficult to get anything published these days.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get the masks book as a giveaway, but that's still a bit of a struggle, but you can download it as a PDF and either print it out or just look at it, and it's got all the evidence, all the scientific evidence showing the damage that masks do. Masks damage your lungs, they damage your eyes, they damage your teeth, they damage your health, they damage your every part of your body. They damage your brain, because brain cells are dying because of the hypoxia. And I feel so sorry for people who are walking around wearing masks all day. If you wear a mask, you have to change it every 2 to 4 hours. Otherwise, you are killing yourself. And you have to not touch any part of the mask apart from the ear loops and the nose clip. And yet you see people, I weep when I walk down the street and I see people take a grubby mask out of their pocket or out of their handbag and they put it on their face.
The ignorance.
And you're breathing in. I saw twice, I have seen women drop face masks on the pavement, pick them up and put them on.
You're making me sick now.
Would you kiss the pavement, madam? I mean, do you eat dog shit for dinner? What the hell is going on with the world? Why
that's a proper way to leave it. That's a proper way to leave it. I turned this around for 2 hour repeats live on the website. If you're back next Monday, all well and good. You might be, you might not be. That's entirely up to you. Thanks again for coming on today. It's been great. This is a godsend on a Monday. So thanks very much, Vernon.
It's always a delight, Richie. Thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Anytime. The great Dr. Vernon Coleman, the one and only, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show Monday. That's it for the programme. Thanks to Vernon, of course. Thanks to you. Speak tomorrow at 5. Until then, bye from me. Take care of yourselves and one another. Bye now.